Welcome to the Cash Considerations Podcast, a Chicago Bulls podcast. I'm Ricky O'Donnell. This is episode number 6, and we're going to start off with a special announcement. Jason, at episode 6, we're finally on iTunes, we're on Spotify, we're on Stitcher, we're on Google Play. Dare I say, we're basically a legitimate podcast at this point.
Yeah, I guess so. We're finally going there. It took us long enough. We took several weeks, bunch of episodes, but now we're finally kind of, I wouldn't say hitting the big time, but we're a bit more legit now. So you can find us on all your, wherever you like to listen to your podcasts, you can find us now.
Don't worry. It's still not going to sound that good. And we still don't know how to edit anything we're doing. So it's a straight stream of consciousness.
Damn right. But
that's what you're getting with the Cash Considerations podcast.
Yeah, that's what we were going for from the start. We're just shooting the shit about the Bulls, and that's it. That's what you're going to get.
So the Bulls are now 4-10 after losing on Monday night. We're taping this after the game to the Dallas Mavericks, 103-98. Bulls fall again in another pretty close game. This comes off the heels of their victory over the Cleveland Cavaliers on Saturday. So I think we should start off with this Mavericks game. Pretty ugly game all around. Yeah. One of the big trends for the Bulls recently since that Warriors game, Stefan Noh wrote a great piece about this today at The Athletic, was that the Bulls have been intentionally trying to like slow the pace to give themselves a chance in games. As someone who watches way too much college basketball, it's very reminiscent of how a shitty overmatched college team tries to just like junk things up because they know they, you know, in a high possession game.
Play zone, do that, all that trash.
Yeah, the Bulls are they're like a zone defense away from being Monmouth right now. But like, this is what all college teams do, right? It's like you try to limit the possessions when you suck, when you're the underdog, because you know you can't match talent with a better team doing a run and gun. So credit Fred Hoiberg for adopting this strategy. The Bulls, since that Warriors game, they only have one win, but they haven't lost by double digits. Well, I guess they have two wins, right?
Two wins, the Knicks and the Cavs.
Knicks and Cavs.
They got two wins. Like crazy-ass one-point wins against shitty teams. Just kind of wild games.
Right, so they got two wins since that Warriors blowout. They have not been defeated by double digits over that stretch. So, you know, it's not fun to watch. I mean, there's very little ball movement going on right now. What I noticed today is that basically the entire offense is just everyone standing around draining the shot clock and hoping LaVine can bail them out in the last few seconds of a possession. It's just some ugly stuff. I think LaVine's recent numbers have really reflected that. He was not great tonight. You know, the line's going to look good on the surface. 26 points, 5 rebounds, 5 assists, 4 steals. But he was only 8-23 from the field. He did get to the foul line, 11 free throw attempts, made 10 of them. So it was a mixed bag for LaVine. But, you know, the efficiency that we saw at the beginning of the season is starting to come down a little bit. I honestly think that has a lot to do with the style of play the Bulls are playing. When you're going to grind out possessions and not do this, like, run and gun, pace and space stuff, it's just going to put a hamper on one guy's efficiency. And, you know, that also coincides with Jabari Parker's return to the lineup. We could talk about him a little bit more later. So LaVine's performance is one thing that stuck out to me tonight. What were your impressions of this game?
Yeah, I did not see the whole game yet. I was playing rewatching, but I did watch the beginning, which was really ugly. Some missed layups, both teams, some turnover sloppiness. And then I watched the entirety of the fourth quarter, and LaVine did really struggle. He had problems with turnovers. He had 7 turnovers. That's been an issue with him all season. But again, I can't even like really – his shot selection is questionable, some bad turnovers, but I can't even really just blame him that much because there's just so much pressure on him to create so much of the offense with Lowry out, with Dunn out, with Denzel out, with Portis out. There's just so many guys. There's only so many guys on the roster that can create offense, and just having him do so much, and like you mentioned, when it's being slowed down in a half-court setting. And another thing is defenses are putting so much attention on him now. They're hard doubling him, getting the ball out of his hands. He's got to make a lot of decisions, and he has done some nice things finding big guys in the middle of the floor, finding Wendell Carter. He had a nice pass to Robin Lopez, and Lopez dished it off. I can't remember who it was for a basket. So he has done some nice things in terms of that. But overall, when he's got his usage is up over 30 and defenses are keying on him, and there's just not much other talent in the court. I mean, it's only natural for his efficiency to come down. So, I mean, I can't even be that upset about that. Would it be nice if the shot selection was better? Yes. Would it be nice if the turnovers came down? Yes. But, like, I mean – for right now, like I can't really complain about Zach LaVine. He's basically their only consistent source of offense. So I mean, besides him, I mean, really just nobody
else was. I want to read this off real quick. Good tweet from Mark Stratman tonight before we change the subject. LaVine is shooting 50 for 134 over his last six games. That's 37.3% from the field. And that includes the Knicks game where he was 13 to 25. So obviously he's been having to do a lot. He's also averaging 40 minutes a game over that stretch. So, you know, it just stands to reason that with the Bulls playing a slower pace, with defenses loading up against him, with him just carrying an incredible burden offensively, the efficiency is going to dip a little bit. I do think there have been some bright spots in LaVine's recent play still, despite the fact that his efficiency has dipped a little. Dude, he's turning into a pretty good passer. Like, I think he gets better every single game as a passer. And I always thought this was the one silver lining of the Chris Dunn injury. LaVine's had the ball in his hands a lot more. He's had to act as sort of that offensive initiator role, even with Archie Diacono in the starting lineup now, even with some other guys getting some creation opportunities. It's mostly LaVine. I mean, like 80 to 90% of the possessions throughout the game are on Zach LaVine's shoulders to create. And I think that he has made strides as a passer. I'm telling you, he throws two or three passes a game that makes me think that's something he can continue to build on. He can, you know, continue to grow with his vision as a passer. And he seems to particularly have a good rapport with Carter. LaVine talks about Carter in the media, he's constantly praising him. Carter did not have his best game tonight. It was actually one of his worst games as a pro. 7 points, 10 boards, 3-9 shooting from the field. Carter still made a pretty big impact defensively.
He did have a sick block of Luka Doncic, and he was plus 10. Not that plus minus means everything, but he was plus 10. So, like, even while he missed all three of his three-pointers, like I said, he didn't shoot very well. He's been so huge defensively. I wrote something the other day for Forbes about Carter, just about how well he's been playing. And just the defense, the defense of the Bulls have been playing lately has been so much better since that Warriors game. Much more respectable. I think some of it it's been somewhat lucky at times, but when Carter's been on the floor, they've played like an elite defense. And I think a lot of it has been him. His rim protection has been terrific. He's averaging like over two blocks a game. That's up towards the leaders as a rookie. One of the stats I saw was that like he's field goal percentage against at the rim. Some of the defensive stats, you never know how reliable those can be, but from the tracking at NBA.com, he was at like 50%, I think, against at the rim, which is terrific. I think it was like third or fourth among high volume defenders at the rim. Like, he's been just absolutely terrific, just coming along so quickly for such a young player. I know we talked about how good he was on our last podcast, was the actual title of it was like Wendell Carter is everything. But even though he didn't even have his best game today, at least offensively, he's still making an impact in other areas.
He still rules, and I find myself checking out mentally when he's not in the game. It's like, for as good as LaVine has been, all I really want to watch is Carter. LaVine's been super fun, too, but a lot of times they're on the floor together, and that's when the game is really compelling. What really stands out to me is, like, covering the draft these last few years at SB Nation, there's such a huge learning curve for rookie centers defensively. And Carter, who doesn't turn 20 years old until the regular season ends, he's 19 the whole damn year, he's already like a master at like the intricacies of playing NBA level defense, which is honestly shocking. I mean,
one of the things on that note, I can't remember who pointed out, I might have been Stefano again. The thing about tagging, like, you know, offensive player to avoid defensive 3 seconds, I think he was the one who showed the video of it, just like hanging around the rim, tagging his man to avoid a defensive 3 seconds, and then going back and challenging shots. I can't remember. I think that was the Cavs game. I can't remember who he blocked, but just like little stuff like that. And I think after the game, I think Hoiberg might have said it, or Carr might have said it, that Robin Lopez spent like an entire practice session once just teaching him that, and he's learning that, and he's picking that up so quickly and doing it in game. So those little things just help Carter stand out as a young player and making that kind of difference on defense.
Yeah, I remember John Greenberg wrote a thing on Carter at the beginning of the season where he talked to Hoiberg. And one thing that Hoiberg said that stuck with me was that you only have to tell Carter something once. He's just a quick learner. He gets it right away. The fact that he's this good defensively from the get-go is a huge testament to his mind, I think, because, you know, every time we head into a draft, we're talking about wingspan, we're talking about vertical leap inches, but the hardest thing to measure is still feel for the game. That's what takes just repeated viewings over a long period of time. And if you look at Carter as a college player, he was playing a zone defense at Duke because Marvin Bagley single-handedly tanked their ability to play man defense. Carter also wasn't in as good a shape as a college player as he is now. He's really lost a lot of that baby fat. He looks quicker, more explosive than he has been in the past. And one of the notes that I wrote down while watching the Cavs game is Wendell Carter can be whoever you want him to be. It's like there's two types of centers in the NBA right now. There's the guy who's going to be like the rim runner, the guy who's going to set a screen, dive to the basket, catch the alley-oop. Or there's the dude who's going to set the screen, pop, and is going to either facilitate out of like the high post area, or he's going to shoot the three. Carter can do both of those things. Yeah. He looks a lot more explosive in terms of finishing dunks and alley-oops than he did in college. I mean, I thought that he might be just a little under-athletic initially when he first declared for the draft. He might be a little under-athletic to be that type of guy who could, you know, be a rim runner, someone who can be catching lobs all day. But he definitely has that skill set. We've seen him dunk everything so far with the Bulls, so that's been phenomenal. He's also been like a rim-level rebound grabber, which has been great. And then in terms of his pick-and-pop ability, I think he sort of has a slow release on his jump shot. But man, when he gets time and can set his feet, he has a really good stroke. I think he's shooting something like 80% from the foul line this year. He's shooting 38% from three and 76% from the foul line. I got the numbers up right now. So he's got a great stroke. He just doesn't have a quick release. But, you know, if you give him time and dare him to take that shot, he's going to knock it down.
Right, yeah. As a big man, not having the quickest, I mean, that's fine. I mean, tons of big guys step out. They don't have the quickest release. We saw Brook Lopez hit like 8 3-pointers, and he's not firing up quick release shots. But if you can hit those shots out there, spread the floor as a big man, that makes the offense so much more dynamic.
Yeah, so I think Carter's been phenomenal. You know, he's the reason to watch every game. And I really like Archie Diacono, too. I know we both watched the Cavs game. Archie Diacono, that was sort
of his game. First start.
Yeah. His first start. I mean, once again, Hoiberg looks like he made a great move, pulling campaign from the starting lineup to a DNP. Now Archie Diacono is the starter. Shaq Harrison is the backup. And Archie Diacono in that game against the Cavs, 15 points on 6-8 shooting. He was great in the first quarter. LaVine went to bat for him after the game. I don't have the quote in front of me, but LaVine was praising Archie Diacono's play. Why not go with Archie Diacono, right? It's like the Bulls needed more of a defensive complement.
He's steady. He plays hard. He's a smart player. He shoots pretty well. He started today shooting really well. I know he finished poorly. He was only 3 of 9 overall, 2 of 7 from three, but he had 6 assists, 0 turnovers. He was a +6. He did have 5 fouls, but just overall, he's like, I made fun of him last year. I did not think he was an NBA player. I mean, just a little try hard white guy, like easy guy to like, whatever, just kind of brush off. But like, he's played really solid so far this year, and I got to give him credit. And I mean, he's just way more of a steady presence out there than Campaign. His Campaign, since that huge game, has been absolutely terrible. And so Fred made the switch, and so far, Arch has been a really solid player, just both ends of the floor. He's obviously going to be overmatched against the better point guards in the league. And that, I mean, he's never going to be an actual good starter on a good team, obviously. But he's proving that he can stick in the league. And for right now, with what the Bulls have with Dunhurt, and with their point guard situation, you might as well start him and play him big minutes because he's at least a steady presence out there. He can hit threes, he can move the ball, make the smart play, and at least try as hard on defense.
Yeah, and, you know, it's another sort of bullet point in the fact that I think Hoiberg's coaching well this year. When you look at the fact that he's been unafraid to make quick coaching changes, like benching Jabari in the preseason, installing Carter as the starter in the preseason, now he has changed the point guard lineup. He's also gone back to Robin Lopez as the backup center after flirting with Felicio for a little bit. Robin Lopez has given him tons of good minutes since he's been installed as a backup center. So I really like everything Hoiberg's doing this year. You'll even see some plays from Stefan. People should just be listening to Stefan's podcast because we're just trimming off him anyway. But
seriously,
he's been doing some good work in terms of showing the ATOs that Hoiberg's been coming up with. So, you know, Hoiberg just now sort of seems to be finally standing up for himself a little bit. I think that he realizes that. This, you know, there's a lot of pressure on him. Like, no one seems to really know the status of his contract heading into that fifth year. Is it guaranteed? Like, no one really knows. There seems to be this widely held belief that this is likely going to be Fred Hoiberg's last season with the Bulls. Maybe he won't even make it out of the year. But I got to say, man, he's coaching pretty well right now, and he deserves a lot of credit.
Yeah, like, after that Warriors game, I think it was after the Warriors game, I wrote something like, is Fred going to be, like, the next coach fired? And I said probably not because of the injuries and stuff, as long as they weren't getting embarrassed on a nightly basis. And as we talked about, they haven't won that many games, but they've been staying competitive. They were competitive against the Nuggets, competitive against the Pacers, against the Rockets. And while the Rockets haven't been good to start the season, like, those are really quality teams. And at least stay close and be competitive in those games with a chance to win at the end. That's really all you can ask for with the roster that they're putting out there now. Like, staying close and then losing close games is probably the best case scenario. As we've talked about, we want them to get high pick and get one of those Duke guys. But as long as they're competitive, and at least while it may be ugly at times, like, that's, there's just so much you can do with a shit roster with so many injuries right now. So, like, stay close, be competitive. They're not getting blown out every night. Like, you look at, like, I feel like the Phoenix Suns, like, people were expecting them to take a little step forward this year with the young talent they have. They brought in some veterans, and I feel like they've been getting their ass beat, like, on a nightly basis. I think they fell to, like, 2-11. And, like, so if the Bulls were like that and just getting shellacked every night, and it looked like with that Warriors game earlier in the year, the Hornets game, they lost by 30, that they were on their way to that. But lately, they've really turned it around. Like you said, the style has changed a bit, just they're kind of mucking up the games, and they're staying competitive. We'll see what happens. We'll talk about this a little more later with the upcoming schedule. The rest of the week is a real bitch, and so we'll see if they can stay close in those upcoming games. But for right now, Fred is really doing the best he can with what he's got. One of my only real qualms is he's playing Justin Holiday like 35, 36 minutes a game, and I would like to see a little more Chandler Hutchinson. He only played 18 minutes tonight. I think only played like 5 minutes in the second half. Despite he had 9 points, 9 rebounds, did some really nice things. He's a pretty good cutter, aggressive attacking the basket. The 9 rebounds in 18 minutes is really impressive for a wing. So I would like to see a little more Hutch, a little less Holiday, but I guess maybe they're just trying to audition Holiday for a trade somewhere. I would guess Holiday gets traded at some point. But other than that, I mean, I can't have too many qualms with what Hoiberg's doing.
Yeah, I want to talk about Hutchinson, too, because I thought today – I didn't see that Rockets game when he had 12 points. That's been the only game he scored in double digits so far. But I thought today was his best game that I've seen, 9 points, 9 rebounds, 4-7 from the field in 18 minutes. I'm still not super high on him because, like, his first shot attempt against the Cavs, like, totally bricked.
His jumper, he did hit his only three today, but his jumper is not pretty. You see it in his threes. You see it in his free throws. Like, you got to get Fred Hoiberg, MD, shot doctor on that. And I feel like I've read that they are working really hard to rework his shot because it is just not pretty.
So it's not even just the jumper, though. Like, that first one against the Cavs was a drive where he, like, bodied up and had, like, a four-foot look at the basket and just totally bricked it. I just don't think he has, like, the poise about him that Carter has, which is why, like, drafting seniors and thinking that they're going to be NBA-ready right off the bat, I mean, that is just such a flawed mindset. It's, like, the reason they were in college 4 years in a row in the first place is because they're not NBA-ready. So Hutchinson does do some things I like. He's really good pushing the ball in transition. I like his vision. He definitely seems to compete defensively, compete on the glass. So I want to see more of Hutchinson for sure. I think that he's a player who's, like, made for Twitter highlights. Like, you're going to see some flashes from him. He's had a few dunks already that have made for great highlights. But in general, I'm not super optimistic on him, but definitely want to see more of him. The Bulls have nothing to lose, especially with Valentine being out right now. It's disappointing. Sort of that he's only playing 18 minutes a game over the whole year, I guess. So I'd like to see a little bit more of him. I did think he played well tonight, and Fred, just put him out there. Like, we can only take so many Justin Holiday.
Yeah, like, Holiday's been fine. Like, he's solid veteran, solid role player. Yeah. But, like,
I like Holiday.
And he's playing 36 minutes a game, like top 10 NBA in minutes. Like, while that some of it's out of necessity because of Denzel's injury, it's just like, just play your rookie more, man. Come on. Like, you don't need 36 minutes a game at Justin Holiday.
Totally agree. Do you want to talk about the Cavs game a little bit? That was a rare Bulls win, so we should focus on it.
First, I do want to make a statement about Chandler Hutchinson. I was bitching about this on Twitter. I believe Stacey King has referred to him multiple times as young Pip. And I would like to say that I think that is ridiculous. That needs to end. It needs to stop. Scottie Pippen is one of the best players of all time. Obviously, he was raw, little-known guy coming out of Central Arkansas. Still, I mean, don't do it. I can't deal with it. Like, again, Scottie Pippen, one of the best players of all time, second best Bull ever. Just don't put that on the kid. Like, sure, he does some similar stuff in terms of lengthy.
He's 6'7". That's it. That's where the similarities at. Just because you're 6'7" doesn't mean you get.
There are a million 6'7" rangy athletic wings, and they're not all fucking young Scottie Pippen. Just don't do it. Stop with that nickname. I don't want it. Hutchinson would be a great player. I don't ever want to hear him called young pick because Scottie Pippen's one of the best fucking players ever. That's rant over. Let's move on to the Cavs game.
Great rant. Cavs game. Carter was a stud in that game. 15 points, 5 boards, 5 of 6 from the field. That game is mostly going to be remembered for how it ended. Jabari Parker.
Game-saving block.
Ceiling block.
Unbelievable. And it was so funny, too, because
they
they swapped out Carter for Jabari because the Cavs were going small, and everyone's like, "What the hell are you doing, Fred?" And then Jabari gets the game-saving block and Colin Sexton. Hilarious stuff. After kind of a hilarious end of the game, it was just kind of a shit show of a game. It looked like the Bulls were going to blow them out. I was ragging on the Cavs like the entire first half because it was ugly, and then the Bulls blew like a 17-point lead or whatever it was, and then it was close the whole second half, and then the Bulls almost blew it again in the final seconds, but. Good. Jabari Parker saves the day for once.
Yeah, the last offensive possession on there was horrendous. Like, LaVine was waiting for Carter to set him a screen, but then, like, threw him the ball, and Carter didn't know what to do, and it ended up being a turnover. That was another game where LaVine scored 24 points, but he took 22 shots to get there. I thought his passing again in that game was solid. He had another 5 assists. If LaVine can keep getting, 5-6 assists, I feel like that's all we can really ask for. Blake, I mean, that was the RJ Diakono game, really. That's when he had 15 points. He was solid. So, I mean, that was a game that the Bulls have to win, I think, just to stay engaged the rest of the year. Like, me and you can talk about the tank odds. And right now, if you're wondering where the Bulls sit in the tank race, at 4-10, they're tied for fourth with the Knicks. So that's where they're at right now. But, like, you got to beat the Cavs.
That would have been brutal. The Cavs are a joke.
Turmoil. Kevin Love's not playing. I mean, the Cavs are seriously horrendous right now.
The Cavs are just as hurt as the Bulls. Love's out. Who the hell? George Hill was out. Not that Sam Decker's good, but he was out. Chetty Osman was out. Like, they're also missing like 4 or 5 rotation players, and they're absolutely terrible. They're, 1-11 now, and they were awful to start the game. Like I said, I was basically clowning the Cavs the entire first quarter. I was like, this team's a joke. Like, this game's not going to be even close. And then, of course, they came back. Old friend Kyle Korver had some threes. Jordan Clarkson did some stuff. Tristan Thompson dominated. Rodney Hood had Rodney Hood postered Wendell at one point, which is kind of tough. And Sexton had a nice game as well, too, until he blew it at the end. But although, I guess one I remember noticeable thing about that game was old friend David Nwaba. We love David Nwaba around here. We kind of wish the Bulls kind of had him. He threw up some of the worst 3-point shots I've ever seen in my life. He almost broke the backboard with one of them. It was so bad.
But you know the only play I remember for that? LaVine hit, like, some ridiculous turnaround jumper. It was either, like, a fadeaway or it was out of the post. He hit 2 shots like that earlier in the game. He tried to do that shit to Nwaba and airball there.
Yeah, Nwaba's a badass. Defensively, the guy just gets after it. He's just works really hard. Just that jumper, man, it was tough.
So that wraps up what we want to talk about with the Bulls, but we still have some Bulls adjacent news to talk about. And that's the big Jimmy Butler trade. Jimmy Butler heading to the 76ers. The Timberwolves' long nightmare is finally over. Tom Thibodeau loses the power struggle. Jimmy Butler is going to Philly for Robert Covington, for Dario Saric, for Jared Bayless. The Wolves are also sending Justin Patton in that trade. It's
literally the same thing the Bulls sent. Butler and Patton for whatever.
Just initial thoughts on how Jimmy fits into Philadelphia. Sort of, what are you thinking on that right now?
I mean, it'll be interesting with fitting in with Joel, Simmons and then Fultz. I mean, Fultz is a goddamn mess. Tonight there was a whole other thing with
feels lost cause, man. It's so sad.
I'm sure you saw this up the free throw. He claimed that it slipped. It's literally like Charles Barkley's fucking golf swing, like the huge hitch in the middle of it. He claimed that it slipped and he had to like read. I mean, I don't buy that at all. It is brutal with him right now. And like I feel like at some with Jimmy coming in now, especially like I don't know how long Fultz is gonna last there. I thought he was gonna be in the trade to Minnesota, but I mean, if Tibbs, I guess, is looking for guys that can help him compete right now, and Fultz really isn't gonna do that. Really, just wouldn't have a place on that team. So I guess it does kind of make sense that he wasn't involved in that deal.
He's not giving Fultz D Rose's minutes.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, with Teague Rose there. I mean, Tyus Jones is still there, even though he's been terrible. Yeah, so obviously not. Yeah, I feel like Fultz is probably going to be marginalized there, and Jimmy's going to destroy him once he sees what's going on there. But I mean, with Jimmy, Embiid, and Simmons, it's not the best fit, considering Simmons can't shoot either. He's only made like 2 shots outside the paint, and Jimmy loves the ball in his hands now. But if they can still do some, that's still a ton of talent. They can do some really interesting stuff with if Jimmy commits more to playing off the ball again, or if Simmons does stuff off the ball, screening for each other, cutting off the ball. Like, they can do some really cool stuff there, and they needed a guy to close games for them because their offense hasn't been good all year in general. They're one of the worst offensive teams in the fourth quarter. They have a problem with turnovers, and Jimmy's always been a pretty good when he's engaged. He's never been a guy to turn it over that much. So I think we just kind of, like, as we saw the Sixers and their huge rise at last year, bolstered by that end of stretch last year, or the end of the year, and then going into the playoffs, they beat a flawed Heat team. And then the Celtics just kind of exposed their flaws. Simmons' shooting, lack of shooting, Embiid's still young, turnover prone. And with Fultz not coming along, and with Embiid's contract, I think his extension's going to be kicking in next year. Like, with the cap space dwindling, they didn't get a star in the offseason. They just figured, we're going to have to make this move now to get this third star, and they'll see where it goes. And Jimmy definitely raises their ceiling. We'll see if he stays there. If they mesh well and they compete, I would think he would like to. You would think, as long as he gets along with those guys and they play pretty well. I feel like either way it was worth the risk. Like, Covington and Sarge are nice players. They're role players, I think, ultimately. I don't think they're really going to be anything more than that. And the Sixers, I feel like, clearly saw that they were a little behind a team like the Raptors or the Bucks are up and coming. They still need another jolt of offense, and Jimmy will give them that. And he's obviously, when Jimmy's engaged, he's obviously also a terrific defender.
I got a couple thoughts on this. They're definitely going to be a defensive first team. This has the potential to be a totally sick defensive team. I mean, Embiid is arguably the most impactful defensive player in the league, sure. I guess, right there with Rudy Gobert. When he's on the floor and when he's engaged, Simmons has low-key been a stud defensively. That was a question I had about him when he was at LSU, but he makes some big plays defensively. He's so good in that, like, rover role. He covers so much ground. He's obviously a killer rebounder and wants to get every rebound just so he can play point guard for a few seconds and push the ball down court. We know that Butler's a stud defensively, so that team is going to be sick nasty on defense. I think that's going to be their calling card, and I'm really interested to see how they match up with some of the other top teams in the league, because they have the guys who can, you know, lock down all the Celtics' weapons. Or I'd love to see them against the Warriors, how they match up there. So their defense is going to be fascinating, especially because, like, this is the year when every team's scoring 140, right? So the Sixers are going the other way. They're trying to build a lockdown defensive team. I think that's pretty interesting. Another thing, do you remember when the Lakers signed LeBron? They also signed Rondo, Lance Stephenson, and everyone immediately bemoaned the lack of shooting. But what Magic Johnson, Rob Pelinka, and LeBron all said was that they thought that the real sort of market inefficiency was on like ball handlers and playmakers. They wanted more guys who could create rather than just guys who could be spot-up shooters for LeBron. Now, the Lakers just don't have the talent level to really put that theory to the test, but that's what the 76ers are doing, whether they did it intentionally or not. Like, Embiid can be a really high usage star. Simmons wants the ball in his hands at all times. And we know that Butler's can be like a creator, even though he doesn't have like a super high usage rate. Typically Butler, he's definitely a creator. He likes the ball in his hands. So they have shot creators up and down the lineup with those three guys. Now, I can't think of another team with three guys who are as skilled at creating individual offense as those three guys. So I think that that's really going to be an interesting test during a time in the league when everyone wants shooting. They're going with a bunch of dudes who can create off the dribble. Obviously, that will put the other two spots in the lineup under a certain amount of pressure. They're going to need shooters in those spots. Landry Shamet, I think, is going to be huge for them. He's a rookie who's been a damn good shooter so far. J.J. Redick still exists. They also have Wilson Chandler, who's coming back from injury. Mike Muscola came back today, knocked down 3 3-pointers for him. If I'm them, trade for Denzel Valentine. I would, right? Like, Valentine could still be useful, I think, in a certain role. Definitely his best skill is his shooting ability, particularly his catching or his pull-up shooting ability. You can catch and shoot, too. So I don't know if the Bulls could actually get anything from the Sixers for Valentine. Maybe they can recoup some of these second-round picks. Is that even worth it? Denzel, you know, he's not a total bust for the Bulls. Maybe they want to hang on to him for a little bit, but, you know, that he would be like a good fit for them.
So here's an idea. I know another guy, Korver's been brought up, which is like a natural thing, but here's an idea I feel like I saw recently on Twitter. I think it was Kevin Farragut, our guy, we've talked about him before at NBA Couch, said, I think he mentioned offering them Portis for Fultz. Now, like, Fultz, as we just talked about, might be a completely lost cause.
I think he is.
Would you not do that?
I don't know, man. Like, I have done such a big 180 on Fultz. When Fultz was in the draft, I thought he was a better prospect than, like, Kyrie Irving. I thought that he was the best point guard prospect to come out of the draft this decade, but he's a totally different player because he's just shaken mentally. And I think it's clear now that, like, whatever the issue was, like an injury issue, a mental issue, whatever, like, he's not the same player. He's totally shaken. It's not even the shooting, too. It's, like, affected other parts of his game as well. Yeah, he still has some of that talent he can flash, but he's never going to – I would be really, really surprised if he ever reached his potential or whatever that is now on the Sixers with Butler around. I don't really see Portis fitting into the Bulls long term, so maybe that would be a good trade for the Bulls just to, you know, take a flyer on a high upside guy in Fultz. But, man, I have no faith in Markelle Fultz turning it around right now.
Yeah, I hear you. Like, I when I first saw that idea, it was like a week or two ago, I thought, like, oh, that's pretty good. And then, like, I feel like every damn day I see a new highlight of Fultz just, like, with some goofy stuff with his shot. And I'm just like, oh, man, it's just so damn sad. Like you've said, it's brutal. So, yeah, I don't know if I would do that either. But I feel like it's at least intriguing to think about, if depending on what the Bulls – I know they've talked about how much they love Portis, but I feel like Portis would be a decent fit there as well in terms of just adding another shooter at the four as a backup four. I know Muscala is pretty solid, but Portis is pretty good as well. But in fact, I'm needing a shooter. I thought that could be a decent idea, but yeah, that's obviously, I feel like, a complete long shot, but you never know.
Really, this whole experiment is going to come down to Simmons. I remember when Blake Griffin dropped a 50-point game earlier this year, he said something like, you know, I'm really glad I didn't rest on my laurels as a player and I worked to fit the evolving league. In that game, Blake Griffin took like 10 3-pointers, which if you would have told us that in 2010, you would have looked at us like we were crazy, right? Like, Blake Griffin was never going to shoot that many threes. We didn't think. He was just a guy who dunked. But Griffin changed with the changing times. Simmons, on the other hand, spent the whole offseason saying, I'm not going to shoot. That's not my game. So to me, it all comes down to Simmons you know, having the mindset to make himself better. I think Simmons is more concerned with his dating life, with his partying life. I mean, he's a young kid still, so we'll see how that works. But to me, Simmons is the swing guy. He's super talented. Kevin Farragut also threw out a trade that I thought was really intriguing. Simmons for Bradley Beal and Otto Porter. How would you feel about those two? So, you know, for as talented as the Sixers are now with three top 20 guys, as Elton Brand said, they did trade two shooters for a non-shooter. Right. In that sense, I actually think it's a better deal for Minnesota than a lot of people do. Like, I saw someone tweet that, you know, the real winner of this trade is the Bulls. Well, Minnesota got a pretty damn good package, I think. And we can talk more about how we view the Butler trade in hindsight, too. But I kind of like Minnesota's package. I think I like it more than a lot of people. Covington is such a good role player for this era. He slides in perfectly. It's a three. Or the two or the three alongside Wiggins on the wing. I like Saric at the four next to Towns because I feel like it's going to put some pressure on Towns to man up defensively. Now, Towns' quotes They've just been dog shit
the entire time. Oh, God, the leadership one?
Yeah, like, what the fuck is your problem, Towns? I love Towns. I'm a huge Towns guy. I have been since that draft. But I saw someone call him Carl Anthony Cantor.
I've seen that multiple times.
And, man, like, that's the type of thing that gets stuck in your head. Because for as skilled as he is, you start to wonder if some of those numbers are empty numbers. Now, the one thing I'd like to see with Towns is, like, just up the value, man. I want to see Towns take 8 threes a game. I want to see if he can score, you know, 28 points a game if given.
Yeah, I mean, well, good sign tonight in the first game after the Butler trade. Towns had 25, 21, and 3 assists, 2 blocks. He did have 10 turnovers, and I guess he only took 11 shots, but, like, a 2020 game, it's at least a very good start. And I think he had a huge game against the Kings as well. Yeah, he had 39 and 19 on 27 shots against the Kings on Friday. So, like, at least maybe it's coming around. Because just, yeah, he's had problems with being soft. I know that Lakers game, he went up against Tyson Chandler, and Chandler was just bodying him in the post, and just no chance down low against him. And he said, it's been kind of soft. He kind of roams the perimeter a bit too much. The quotes he said, I feel like his, like, mind was maybe, like, he was trying to be, like, nice towards his teammates. It's just like, fuck that, man. You just gotta, he's getting a huge contract. It's time, with Butler gone now, like, he's gotta take over as this team's leader. He's gotta be the franchise guy. Like, no, he doesn't have to be nice and try to be like, oh, like, we're all important, blah, blah, blah. It's like, dude, you are the most important player on that franchise. Time to fucking do it. Like, you gotta go after it. And so far, the last couple games, it's been at least trending in the right direction for him.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. What did D-Rose do tonight? We got to keep an eye on D-Rose.
He did have another nice game, 23 points, 8 of 18 shooting, three of five from three. Again, D-Rose, like, three-point sharpshooter? Like, where the hell did this come from?
I have no idea. But at this point, I kind of think he's going to keep doing it all year. Well, I'm not saying the shooting's going to stay the same all year, but I think that he's gonna be taking a lot of shots and he's gonna be putting up good stats.
Oh yeah, absolutely, at this point for sure. He's playing big minutes. Tibbs loves him. He's obviously gonna play huge minutes at this point, so he's, yeah.
So last thing, real, I mean, would you rather have this deal or the Josh Richardson deal if you were in Minnesota? Because I kind of think this is a better deal. I'll take Sarek and Covington, and I like Richardson, and I know Richardson's been a kind of stud this year, so maybe I'm underselling Richardson a little bit, but I mean, people are, like, roasting Thibodeau for this deal, but I think he got a pretty good deal.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, it would have been nice, I guess, if they could have gotten, like, a first out of it as well. I mean, Sarge and Covington is fine. Like, for what the position they're in, like, they were up against it. Butler was basically about to tell them to peace out and, like, hold out or whatever. So, like, I mean, they got a couple solid players to compete now. They'll both shoot threes. Timberwolves needed a bit more three-point shooting. Covington should up their defense. They're like the league's worst defense, I'm pretty sure, at least towards the bottom again, even though Tibbs' calling guard was always supposed to be defense. They've been awful the last couple of years. They should definitely help. Richardson is a really good player. Getting Richardson in a first probably would have been nice. I feel like there's maybe not – I feel like maybe not that big a difference. I feel like – I don't know. Like, I don't even know if I have a strong opinion either way on that. It's like, it is easy to clown Tibbs for just how this whole situation played out. The Wolves looked like asses. He looked like an ass. I don't know if he's going to keep his job. But, I mean, ultimately, I think they did okay. I mean, Tibbs, obviously, again, he made a big bet with trading Jimmy, getting it from the Bulls. I mean, the Bulls look a little better now. Like, when the Bulls made that trade, I was skeptical. Like, I understood why they did it. Very skeptical about the return when it happened. It obviously looks a lot better now for the Bulls now that Butler's already going to another team. LaVine looks like a stud scorer. Lowry looks great. We'll see about Chris Dunn, but they tanked to get Wendell. So, like, the trade ultimately looks like it's going to work, but I still, like, you mentioned, like, how the Bulls were the big winners. Like, the Bulls still have to win games. Like, they're still a terrible team right now.
That's what I hate about the people, like, anointing the Bulls as, like, the winner of the trade. The NBC Sports Chicago Twitter account tweeted, like, now that it's over, like, thanks for the insane haul. Well, dude, I mean, the Bulls are 4-10. The Bulls suck. I don't think the Bulls have all that much hope. So to just crown the Bulls right now, granted, Markkanen hasn't played, and perhaps he'll end up being the best piece in the whole deal, but at least on the Bulls side, I just have such a problem with anointing the Bulls the winner of this trade when they gave up a top 20 player. Like, look at what the Raptors did. what the Bulls basically said was like, we're giving up on building around Butler because we don't think we're smart enough to build a good team around this guy. And also, they didn't want to pay him the big extension when his contract expired. So, you know, they might ultimately be proven right on that, but it's like the Raptors never gave up. What they did was they kept building as good a team as they could. And then when another superstar became available, they went out and got him.
Yeah,
I think that there's a lot of different timelines and a lot of different scenarios where the Bulls could have built a damn fucking good team around Jimmy Butler. It starts with keeping Nikola Mirotic. You know, if you have a lineup with Mirotic, you know, you drafted Gary Harris. Let's say you keep Gary Harris, that around Butler. You had Spencer Dinwiddie in camp for a while. And then when someone like Kawhi becomes available, maybe you take a swing at him. Or you know, there's just been so much player movement in the league these last few years. It's like the Bulls just gave up. And to me, that was such a coward's move when getting Butler was like the ultimate gift in a sense, because no one expected him to ever be this good. When Rose got hurt, it's like the Bulls had this built-in excuse for how shitty they were going to be. But Butler's ascent sort of mitigated that. You got someone who was basically as good as D. Rose overnight. So I just have a big problem with the Bulls counting themselves as the winners. Now, maybe it will look that way, especially when factoring Carter. I think Carter is going to be really good. Levine's been better than anyone thought. We'll see about Markkanen. I really hope that he can continue to build his game and improve on a strong rookie year. So, you know, the Bulls might end up being in a better position, but the Bulls have to win something before they win the fucking trade.
I'm writing about this for Forbes, and like I think I'm a little more optimistic than you, but still, I mentioned in it, like, the Bulls, while the trade absolutely looks better now, like it looks like it could have been a great decision. They obviously screwed up so much leading up to the trade, where it almost kind of felt like they almost had to do it because they screwed up so much, which is ridiculous, which is why the front office probably should have been fired before the trade actually happened, but it didn't. Now it is absolutely looking better, but they still have to win games. So like before, you can't annoy a team, a winner of a trade, unless they actually win something tangible. So like, I would say the trajectory is, like, I guess when the trade first happened, a lot of people said the Bulls were fleeced. That's obviously not the case. But at this point now, it's like, I still think the Wolves were right to make that trade. They ended at like a 13, 14-year playoff drought. They still are competing now, and they got a couple good players. So like, the Timberwolves, I feel like, still, quote-unquote, won their end of the trade. And the Bulls, I think this is going to be a trade where hopefully both teams came out all right. Obviously, it looks bad for the Timberwolves.
I mean, the Wolves
better for the Bulls, but like the Bulls still got to win. Like you said, it's all you got. Just win, baby. They got to win before they can definitively say anything.
Here's what no one's saying: the Wolves fucked up when they gave Wiggins $150 million. Because when they gave Wiggins that contract, then they couldn't give Butler the supermax. Butler probably would have stayed with the supermax if they just don't re-sign Wiggins. If Wiggins were to hit the open market this year, what do you think he would get a year? Like $10 million a year? Instead, they're giving him what, $25 million a year or some shit? Like, that is what cost them with Butler, because then they couldn't offer Butler the 5-year supermax deal. They just didn't have enough room to do it, and that's what screwed him over. So it was the Wiggins decision that cost him Butler to me.
Yeah, and like, even, and again, like, for sure, and I feel like we look at it, like, Minnesota doesn't make the Butler trade to begin with for the Bulls. Like, does that team even ever go anywhere? Like, with Dunn, Levine, Towns, Wiggins, like, Markkanen? Like, it sounds great in theory, but, like, I feel Levine probably never blossoms into what he is now. Like,
right. I don't know. D-Rose is still taking 25 like, shots a night. Believe that.
I feel like that team wouldn't be that good either. Like, maybe. Like, it's like I said, it sounds great in theory on paper. So, like, making that trade and pulling the trigger on the Butler trade, I feel like still was totally right for the Wolves. And it's looking like it probably might be okay for the Bulls, but it's definitely not a slam dunk yet. They gotta win fucking games. And for right now, that's probably not going to happen. I guess we can transition to the final part of this podcast. As we look ahead to the end of the week, the Bulls are about to play a murderer's row of the Eastern Conference.
Read it off.
So Wednesday night, they go to Boston, who it warms my heart to see the Celtics kind of not being any good, but Celtics are due for a big game back at home after a 1-4 road trip. They've been kind of, I think they probably had a bit of a reality check. They've been struggling offensively. Hayward does not look good. Jaylen Brown has been terrible. Tatum hasn't been that great, but I feel like they're due for a big home game. So I feel like the Bulls are going to get their ass beat in that game. And then they go to Milwaukee on Friday night for the Bucks' new stadium. And the Bucks have been one of the best teams in the league. They look awesome with under Mike Budenholzer. Giannis is an MVP candidate. Chris Middleton is dope. Eric Bledsoe has been a lot better. They've been awesome. Just totally, I feel like the Bulls will probably get their ass beat that game too. And then Saturday, back home against the Toronto Raptors. While the Bulls used to have the Raptors,
Trashters.
The Trashters number, I feel like that's not going to be in the case. That's not going to be the case now. With that streak ended a while ago, and the Raptors have been awesome. I believe the Raptors did lose tonight. Actually, I think they're only their second loss of the year. The Pelicans actually beat them. They played really well. Old friend Etuan Moore at game high 30 points.
Hell yeah!
So good for the Pelicans. It's a nice win for them. But the Raptors are 12-2. Kawhi has been awesome. Just their team in general. They're deep. They're really good. So like, that's just three games coming up this week, which are going to be a real bitch, and I would be absolutely stunned if the Bulls won any of them.
Yeah, no, they're going to get crushed in all those games. I would love to see them beat the Celtics. Fuck the Celtics. Bulls. Yeah. That's
Bulls
my
six. There.
But in general, this is going to be a tough stretch for the Bulls. They're going to get hammered. And if they can, like, keep any of those games within single digits,
good for
I
them.
Would be really impressed. We're grading the Bulls on a curve these days.
Yeah, we are. For sure.
And, you know, just some parting thoughts, I guess. We got to keep up with the Zion watch. Zion in the second game against Army. Yeah. Goes for 27 points, 16 rebounds, 6 blocks. He had just some straight-up nasty blocks in this game. Also, what you're not going to see in that box score is that he threw some amazing passes, especially in the first few minutes of that game before it turned into a runaway for Duke. To me, Zion has clearly established himself as the number one guy in the 2019 draft. Yes, we're only one or two games into the college basketball season. I don't care. I'm taking Zion number one. He's in a tier by himself.
Monster.
After that, you know, RJ Barrett, Cam Reddish, both on Duke. Those guys are 2-3 in some order. You could throw Nas Little from UNC in there as well. But to me, Zion is by himself. And just please, basketball gods, if you do exist, do not send this man to Dan Gilbert in Cleveland. We just need to keep Zion away from
out loud. Don't do it,
boss.
They don't deserve it.
They don't deserve him at all. I mean, at this point, I would either contract the Cavs or move him to Seattle. It's one or the other. No one wants to go to Cleveland. No one's vacationing there, as Joakim Noah once said. Just get the Cavs out of the NBA. I'm sick of them. You lose to the Bulls.
Just chop them right off.
Chop them off. So, you know, we'll have some more Duke games and some more Zion games to talk about as the season goes along. They don't really have any more marquee games on the schedule for the next week, but they do play Indiana on November 27th. That's a Tuesday. That'll be against Romeo Langford, who's another potential top five, top 10 pick. So you're going to want to watch that one. That's on ESPN on Tuesday the 27th. But until then, they've got Eastern Michigan, San Diego State. So, you know, we got to keep you updated on Zion, because I feel exactly we're going to be so good next to Zion. Just give us Zion. Also, it's been 10 years since the Bulls won the D-Rose lottery. I think the Bulls are due for some lottery luck once every 10 years, once a decade. It's like, it's in the NBA's best interest for the Bulls to be good. The lottery odds are flattened this year, so the Bulls don't necessarily need to have the worst record in the league to have a decent chance at the first pick. Come on, NBA. Throw the Bulls a bone.
Give it to us. Give it to us. Yeah.
Give it to us. We don't even want this to be fair. I want a gift.
Put in the call to Adam Silver and have him rig that shit.
Rig that shit, man. We deserve it. Me and Jason specifically, we deserve it for watching this bullshit bowl season and doing a podcast about it.
Yeah.
I think that wraps things up.
We mentioned Markkanen's. Yeah. There was a Larry Markkanen update. I can't even remember if we mentioned it, that he's still about 2 to 4 weeks away, that elbow's being trouble, which, like, I, like, really want to see Lowry back on the floor, but it's also just, like, we know he's awesome, and take your time, because the Bulls got to get Zion. It's basically, like, what it is.
Yeah, definitely take your time. It's for Zion. It's not for me. It's for Zion.
We know Lowry's good. We know LaVine looks pretty good, so, like, take your time with these injuries, lose some games, and Zion Williamson. It's all about.
Did you see the video today of Lowry pushing the sled at practice? And he's just like gassed as fuck when he's done. And LaVine shooting jumpers in the corner, and he comes over and like pats him on the back. That was one of the first moments with this core that actually made my heart swell a little bit. Like, that's the type of feeling that Taj Gibson,
like, and Taj, Joe, I used to Lou and Joe. Yeah.
And I finally got it a little bit watching that video. There was also a good video going around of a girl asking Zach LaVine for a picture, and then she just starts fucking crying as soon as he comes over to take a picture with her. So that was pretty cool, too. He didn't give her a puppy. Rude. He did that last year. I think Zach LaVine should be forced to give all little girls a puppy when he takes a photo with them. But that was nice to see. And I think the thing with Markkanen is, like, he just needs to get his conditioning back. He hasn't been shooting at all. And you got to think, with the injury he has, he's going to lose a lot of that upper body strength that he, you know, worked so hard to gain over the offseason. So, Markkanen, just take your time, bro. This is about Zion. It's not about you.
For Zion. Is there, we have a good, like, hashtag or, like, rhyme thing for Zion, for tanking for Zion? Is there something good we come up with there?
Stop trying for Zion.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. There you go. Round the money. Boom. Stop trying.
Top of my head, but I'm sure it exists, and yeah. I probably saw it self-consciously, and I'm stealing it. But
whatever. That's
stop enough. Trying for Zion, Bulls. Yeah. Do it.
Exactly.
All right. Well, for Jason, I'm Ricky. This is Cash Considerations. Thanks for listening. See ya.
Later. And remember, you can find us now on legitimate podcast places, iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play. So wherever you get your podcast, you can listen to them there. Take it easy.
We're there. Do it. Later.